everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animette from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animette's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say welcome to you, good sir, and or ma'am. Let me just explain a little bit about what this podcast is about. It is a podcast, and it has animation on it. Specifically, the latest news that has happened this week. Now, before that I get into the stories that we're going to cover, though, I just want to mention right now that this is the 25th episode of the Animation Podcast, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to do something a little bit special, and I'm not going to be alone on this. I have actually brought in a special guest with me and a very good buddy of mine who has graciously accepted to do this. This man, you may know him on the internet as Jaimetude, and he also has a web series called From Pages to Pictures, where he would go and analyze movies that are based on books and also like review the book as well and try to compare them as well and try to figure out which is better, the book or the movie. While at the same time, he also runs the show Bluebe TV, which is the hit series, well, the hit web series that teaches kids about autism. Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce you to James Sullivan. James, how you been doing, dude?
Today's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, is brought to you by coffee. Because one sip and makes you go...
Arriba, arriba, andale, andale!
Here's a fun fact. I actually don't drink coffee. I'm pretty much like that squirrel in Hoodwinked. I don't drink coffee. Anyways.
Never saw it. But anyway.
You never saw Hoodwinked? Oh, trust me. The animation is garbage, but the script is amazing. But anyways, going into the stories right now. First up, we're going to cover apparently that Warner Brothers wants to make a Speedy Gonzales movie. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the all-new Pixar short Piper. Then afterwards, we're going to be correcting a story from last week that apparently Uncle Grandpa is not renewed. Then we will be mourning a bit for Kujiwara, the singer of the Digimon theme song, and then we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, filmbook.com by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Okay, so for our first story, this one is actually rather interesting. Now, this is not the first time ever that this has been mentioned, but now it seems to be that things are going underway with it, and Warner Brothers is starting to be a little bit more serious to make this. And this is actually an animated feature based on Speedy Gonzales. Now, they have yet to really have... I think they actually have a writer. Did they get a writer for this? Or James?
I'm looking through the article that you sent me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they have a writer, but it looks like they've got an actor.
Yeah. That's the thing. They didn't get a writer, they didn't get a director, but they do have an actor who will be voicing Speedy Gonzales, and is Eugenio Derbez. And this guy, you may not know him in any like big movies or stuff like that, but he is pretty big in Mexico or like for Spanish translated films. He actually did the voice of Donkey from Shrek for the Spanish version of the film. And going into this, Derbez actually said here, "In Mexico, we grew up watching Speedy Gonzales. He was like a superhero to us, or many more like a revolucionario like Simón Bolívar or Pancho Villa. He watched out for the little people, but with a lot of bravado and all weakness for the ladies. I'm really excited to be bringing this character to the big screen, and besides being Mexican, my full name is Eugenio Derbez Gonzalez, and I have big ears. The casting couldn't be better."
Yeah, he's pretty much a cat luchador in Mexico.
But
I'm looking through the script here, and I notice a slight correction. We do have a screenwriter Hank Nelken of Saving Silverman and Are We Done Yet has been hired to write the script, which is being described as a heist caper.
I don't know if that actually sounds promising, to be honest. I don't know. Like, I highly do doubt it, but it did mention that they are being a lot more serious, and believe it or not, it's actually due to Trump. And considering that he has been going crazy against the Mexicans by building the wall and stuff like that, it actually did mention something about that, believe it or not. Going through here, it says, in a time when Trump is gaining momentum, the world needs Speedy more than ever. Like, I do understand the purpose of it, but I don't know if like Warner Brothers would really be going through making a Looney Tunes movie with just one of the characters with Speedy Gonzalez. I get the purpose, I get the understanding, and I get that they want to do like some kind of origin movie with Speedy Gonzalez, but keep in mind, this is not really the first time that Warner Brothers tried to do a movie on a single Looney Tunes character. I remember a while back, they tried to have this Marvin the Martian movie.
Oh, yeah.
With Mike Myers playing Marvin. They did have some kind of animation test, but that was the last time that I've ever heard of it. So I don't know what happened to that project. I guess they kind of scrapped the idea. Yes. But I don't know. Like, so far, the popularity of the Looney Tunes is not necessarily high. For now, all they got is just the TV shows. Like, they had the Looney Tunes show, but I guess now that's canceled, and now they're moving on to Wabbit. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the new thing going on. So I'm not 100% sure if this would actually happen. It's just that, I don't know. Like, if we are going to start a Looney Tunes movie, like, try to start with something big. Like, try to start with, like, a Lego movie. Like, sort of a Lego movie in a sense. Like, start off by going really big. Like, try to have a Looney Tunes movie with all the characters at once. Try to have, like, kind of a reboot, per se, of something like Space Jam or Looney Tunes Back in Action. And then you can go into it and have, like, some kind of Looney Tunes cinematic universe.
The
like,
Looney
that would
Tunes
be the good
Lego
way.
Movie.
I would. That would actually be a high possibility. Like, first of all, Lego needs to make some Looney Tunes figures, and then, like, they can actually go and do a Looney Tunes movie. That is actually not far off. They're both properties of Warner Brothers, so you never know.
Hey, everything is awesome, Arriba!
I remember hearing about this project years ago. The first time I heard about it, they'd actually brought Mario Lopez on board to play Speedy, and then it didn't go anywhere, and I didn't hear anything else about it until just recently when animatednews.com did this little blurb on it. So I'm gonna be hopefully optimistic towards it and hope that they don't screw it up, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Actually, what I would like to see, like, if this actually does happen, the one thing that I am interested to know is that if there's going to be more than just Speedy Gonzalez appearing in the movie, because when it comes to the Speedy Gonzalez cartoons, he's not the only character there. Oftentimes, we actually see Sylvester, and that would actually be interesting if in this movie we would have Sylvester as the main antagonist. That would actually be cool to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he did do the Pied Piper short.
Mm-hmm.
That
true,
was always
true,
one of my
true.
Favorites.
Yeah. In fact, it actually says here, they did mention it, that apparently Speedy Gonzalez started out as a character in another cartoon before animators Fritz Freleng and Howley Pratt introduced him in an animated short of his own in 1955. Then the legendary Mel Blanc voiced the mouse. That short, which also featured Sylvester the Cat, ended up winning the Academy Award for Best Short Subject. So, it would definitely be interesting. Like, if it does actually become a movie, then, you know, I'll keep myself optimistic as well. I'll see, like, how things can go. Maybe it might not end up being the best, but, you know, hopefully it could be the start of something. Maybe it can encourage people to pay more attention to the Looney Tunes, and maybe we'll see more Looney Tunes movies come afterwards. You never know.
Yeah, maybe. I guess it doesn't name the original short here that he appeared in.
I don't know why, but I guess the writer in Deadline didn't do his entire research. That or he forgot to add it in. So with all that said, let's just wait and see and hope for the best to see if Speedy Gonzales will actually appear in his own movie.
Or he will go the way of Eddie Murphy voicing Hong Kong Fooey. Who knows?
Oh my god, that was a thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was supposed to be. Jesus balls.
You forgot about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Somehow that escaped my memory and it just came back. It's like, that was supposed to be a thing. Now I am glad that it's not. All right, but anyways, let's move on to our next story right here. And this one is going to be coming from Pixar. And what a little surprise. Well, okay, this shouldn't be a surprise because we know that before every Pixar movie, there was always an animated short. Last year, when we got Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur, we got Lava, which was not really all that impressive. And everybody felt that it was way too monotone, like the guys singing all the time. And then we got Sanjay Super Team, which is probably one of Pixar's best animated shorts. It really was impressive. But now, Pixar has finally revealed the next animated short that they're going to do that will appear before Finding Dory. And this one is going to be called Piper. And it says here, directed by Alan Barilado, Piper shares the story of a hungry baby sandpiper that suffers from the fear of water, or hydrophobia, according to Pixar, though that implies Piper has rabies. Oh, that's kind of a shame.
This got that dark right off the bat. Whoa.
Oh, yeah. I end up being pretty dark. But then afterwards, he meets a young hermit crab who teaches Piper about the ocean waves. The six-minute short was scored by Adrian Belew, the lead singer of King Crimson. And so far, we didn't get a clip, but so far, we only have one little picture of a concept art showing the showing Piper, the baby sandpiper, and like his fascination with a little bubble right here.
Aww.
So, and everybody just loved it because, like, oh, look, it's a cute baby bird. And honestly, if I could give my first impressions on it right now, honestly, I'm not going to expect a lot from this. Maybe they're going to do something that could be considered impressive with the animation. But honestly, like, I expect this to be, like, a cute little, this is going to be, like, a cute little short. In a way, it's going to be, like, I can imagine this, it could be something like the Blue Umbrella from, the Blue Umbrella, the animated short before Monsters University.
Like, oh yeah, that was a good one.
It really wasn't much. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, the animation was extremely impressive. It was amazing. But, like, the story, like, it's rather simple. It's just, like, your love story between two umbrellas, funny enough. So, and this one is going to be a bit of the same thing, is that you got this little Piper, he's scared of water, and then you got a little hermit crab who's going to teach him how to be brave and just, like, show him the ways of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. So it's a Karate Kid story starring a baby bird.
Yeah, basically a little bit.
I guess the last time they tackled doing birds as a Pixar short would probably be For the Birds.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
it's honestly one of my favorites.
Yeah, and that was a great short, of course, but I'm looking at this and saying, they have something here that looks like it's trying to go for a lot more of a realistic tone in the modeling and the art style that they're going for. They have this little Photoshop painting here, I guess it looks like. We all know it's going to be Pixar, it's going to be in 3D, but it has this really nice sort of hand-drawn detailed look to it that makes it look very three-dimensional. And I think that if the art style for the short itself is going for this sort of a hybrid 3D 2D look like they did with Paper Man, it would be something new from them, and I would appreciate it. I honestly think this is awesome. This looks incredible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because one thing that I know about these shorts is that it allows the animators to experiment with the technology, with the animation, and try so many different things to see how, you know, like how they can really push the animation to new levels. Like a great example you just mentioned, Paper Man, which honestly, it was the first time for me that I ever saw animation. It looks like 2D. Like, this looks like it was hand-drawn, it looks 2D, but it was actually 3D animation, and it really blew my mind. Like, it was probably arguably even more successful than what the Iron Giant did, like making the giant seem 2D, and it blends in with the environment that surrounds him. Another great example, as I previously stated, Sanjay's Super Team, where pretty much when you enter into Sanjay's dream and things get more stylistic, that was really impressive. Have you ever seen Sanjay's Super Team?
I have not. And ironically, I have seen The Good Dinosaur. I just didn't manage to watch the two together.
Oh, yeah. No. I can understand. Like, there are ways around. Yeah, I can understand. Unfortunately, not a lot of people have seen Sanjay's Super Team, which really is too bad. Because, like, I know for a fact, like, considering how big Inside Out was, and, like, unfortunately, The Good Dinosaur flopped, like, a lot more people saw Lava, and it was pretty much what people complained the most when it came to Inside Out. It's not the movie. It's honestly Lava. Like, Lava looked amazing. It was beautifully detailed. It's really fascinating, but it's just like the execution of it just felt a bit weak.
I wish you would send me someone to Lava.
Oh, yeah. No, but imagine, like, just that for 5 minutes. It's just like, okay. Like, okay, maybe you could have gone without the entire singing. But with Piper, like, I think it'll be easy to guess that it's going to be a silent animated short, of course, like most Pixar shorts are. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be silent, but maybe they're going to go with the art style. Maybe they won't. But I guess for now, we'll just have to wait and see how Piper will turn out when it will be released with Finding Dory on June 17th.
Yes. And on a side note, I was also going to mention, don't they usually do these Pixar shorts as sort of a warm-up for some of the guys that they're hoping are going to be their directors for features?
Oh, yeah. No, that is true. No, that's a good thing you mentioned. Yeah, it is true that the animated shorts, often they're like the training grounds to see who can be the next big director. Basically, it's a training ground for everyone, not just for the director, but also for the animators to try something new, to really push their limits of creativity and also push the limits of their skills to see if they're worthy enough for Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for our next story, this is a bit of an update from last time. Now, in the last episode, I mentioned how both Steven Universe and Uncle Grandpa, apparently they got renewed for season 4 and season 5, because technically both these shows are on season 3. But arguably, some people would say now it's season 2, because apparently season 1 has 52 episodes, but that's just a random thing that seems a bit complicated. And there are so many new sources, they would go and say the same thing, that Steven Universe and Uncle Grandpa got renewed, along with the other shows like The Amazing World of Gumball, Adventure Time, and Regular Show. But apparently, Cartoon Network, they made a bit of a mistake. Maybe not for everything, but in the case of Uncle Grandpa, it's pretty much the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. Uncle Grandpa will unfortunately not be renewed for season 4 or season 5, Right now, it's only going to be doing the third season that it's on right now, and then that's going to be it. That's going to be the last season, and then it'll be over. Honestly, like, I'm not really familiar with Uncle Grandpa. James, have you seen some episodes of Uncle Grandpa?
Ironically, just as we were about to get on here, I actually did watch a few episodes of Uncle Grandpa, which usually I don't, but they were on. And that's, you know, Saturday mornings now I'm just sort of like, okay, well, it's on. I'm going to doze back and forth and pass and forth and in between sleep and awake and then just sort of stay awake for some stuff and not for others. Uncle Grandpa is in league with their Cartoon Network's recent slew of very, very surreal and just sort of high concept type of TV shows, where they throw in a lot of creativity, but it's also it looks so insane. I mean, the picture right here that they have in the article has that says it all. Uncle Grandpa is a guy who looks like he could be an uncle and a grandpa with a beanie for some reason. He has a tiger that's animated through stock photos.
And it says here his name is actually Giant Realistic Flying Tiger.
Yes. There's a slice of pizza with arms and sunglasses, and I have no idea who this giant floating head is, but it looks very angry and it's about to eat somebody.
it just looks a bit disgusting. It's like, oh, for God's sakes. I have no idea. But
it's kind of an ugly show. I hate to say it, but it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I wouldn't blame you there. No, like, with Uncle Grandpa, I'm not really that familiar with it. It's just I've heard some stuff, and it seems like a show that's not been receiving well, but at the same time, I wouldn't say that it would get as much universal hate as something like Teen Titans Go. The one thing that I knew is that apparently there was one crossover episode with Steven Universe, and it honestly kind of freaked, like, the picture that I saw of that crossover, it kind of scared me a bit, because, like, you see all the gems. Like they're their usual selves, but somehow they have the fate, like the head of Uncle Grandpa for some reason. I don't know why. Did that actually happen? Is this actually canon?
That happened. That is canon. But I think that was an April Fool's episode as well. So it was an excuse for both shows to cross over and be a little bit weird, and kind of like some other shows that I know. But in any case, Steven Universe has a more I should say in its form of surrealism, it's more a dreamlike fantasy than Uncle Grandpa. Uncle Grandpa is sort of it's trying in the same league that Amazing World of Gumball and
Adventure Time
are trying to be weird and charming at the same time. And I know there are some kids out there that love it, because Cartoon Network has this thing where they videotape themselves imitating their favorite characters, and they've got kids on the showing themselves on the network going, "Good morning." And it makes Teen Titans Go look normal by comparison.
Oh wow. Yeah, because that's the thing that I can imagine with what Cartoon Network at least is going with, is going, like, they want to go with the more like oddball, surrealistic kind of TV shows. Like, this was far from my period when I watched Cartoon Network during the days when you know, the big legends like Jenny Tartakovsky and others were in there doing, like, or Craig McCracken, like, doing shows like Dexter's Lab or Johnny Bravo or Powerpuff Girls and stuff like that. It, like, this is definitely a lot more surrealistic. Like, they want to go in the same, like, they want to really try to capture the massive success that shows like Adventure Time are going through, because, like, it has this very strange and surreal, almost Yellow Submarine-esque kind of feel into it, while also having a massive story. And with this, like, with Uncle Grandpa, like, they try to, like, that's the thing, like, they want to try to capture the weirdness and the surrealistic, and they want to try to see how they push, like, how far they can go with the weirdness and, like, just go with the complete random bonkers, do whatever they want kind of feel. But I guess it didn't really work out as well as other shows, because, like, at least with Steven Universe, the one thing that I do know about it is that it's very, like, even though it is more fantasy, like, it is very, like, it has its crap in order, in a sense.
Yeah, speaking of Powerpuff Girls, they just had a reboot series come on last week, which I actually thought was pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yes, they, yeah. You haven't heard about that? The new Powerpuff Girls series?
Oh, no. I definitely have heard about it. And, like, I saw on social media, like, the big trend of Powerpuff Yourself, which, honestly, I didn't do because I feel like it has none of my personal features. It's like, it doesn't feel as accustomed as the one they did. I did hear, of course, about the Powerpuff Girls reboot, and, like, I did hear, like, probably the first that I've heard about it was the massive controversy that they didn't hire any of the original voice actresses in there, and that stirred, like, a lot of crap. But hearing that the Powerpuff Girls, like, the new Powerpuff Girls show is doing good, like, you know, all right, that's good to know. You know, at least, like, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. They got everything in there. Some elements are updated a bit for the new show, but mostly it's in the same league of the original show. And ironically, to bring things full circle, they do have a new villain character in there that looks like he's designed straight out of Uncle Grandpa, a character called Man Boy. All the powers of a man in the body of a boy.
Oh. Yes. For a moment, I thought you would say, like, oh, one of the villains is Uncle Grandpa.
Well, I'm looking at this. I'll have to pull up an image for you to see here, but yeah, if you look at this guy's mustache, you'll see what I mean. Let's see here. Man Boy, Powerpuff Girls. Okay.
No, but I'm sure there would be.
And plop.
Alright, let me see this. Alright, this is going to be my first time seeing Man Boy. What the? Oh my god. Actually, he reminds me of, like, just through the design, he reminds me of something that came out of another Cartoon Network show, Clarence, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he looks like he belongs in that universe.
Yeah. They got their collective of artists and concept people. They're probably switching from show to show. I don't know how they came up with this, but it was amusing. Hopefully it's only one episode this guy appears in. I don't know.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, like, I'm sure they're going to get a lot of the other Powerpuff Girls villains as well. Like, they got to have Mojo Jojo. They'll probably bring back him. Or, they'll, of course, they're going to have the gang Green Gang.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're going to bring, like, I'm sure they're going to bring up a lot of the original villains for nostalgia purposes.
Yeah.
Like, that I can guarantee you.
Mojo Jojo was their Green Goblin, so I can't see them going through any episodes without turning him back into a major villain.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
But, yeah, basically going back into Uncle Grandpa, so keep watching Uncle Grandpa for now because it's pretty much the final season that you will be seeing him on. And for now, chances are it'll pretty much be ending this summer.
Yeah. Or you don't have to watch it. We won't say either way.
I don't know. Either way. Just cherish Uncle Grandpa as much as you can, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, moving on to our next story. This is going to be a bit of a sad one. Unfortunately, a bit of the world is sadly at mourn that we lost a prominent singer in Japan known as Kujiwara. He unfortunately died due to cancer in his upper pharynx. Is that how you say it?
Pharynx, I think.
Yeah, in his upper pharynx. And unfortunately, he died at a scarily young age of 42.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, now it says that there will be, like, in Japan, there is going to be a Wadakuji Okawade no Kai, which is a Kujiwara farewell event. And for those of you who may not know who Kujiwara is, he is actually very well known in Japan for singing the theme songs of Digimon. It says here in the article of Anime News Network that Wada is most notable for performing theme songs for the Digimon anime franchise. His major debut came in 1999 when he performed the theme song Butterfly for Digimon Adventure. He has since provided the theme songs of Digimon Adventure 02, Digimon Tamers, Digimon Frontier, Digimon Data Squad, and Digimon Xros War, or I don't know how you say that, Xros War. He also performed the he also performed the opening theme song for the original Japanese version of Transformers Robots in Disguise. His latest works consist of performing theme songs for the movie Digimon Adventure Tri, the six-part sequel film series of Digimon Adventure. He performed a remake of Butterfly called Butterfly Tri-Version for the first film, and similarly performed Seven Tri-Version, a remake of his song Seven from Digimon Adventure, for the second film. Now, honestly, I remember back as a kid, I'm going to be very honest. Like, I'm not very knowledgeable in the Japanese versions of Digimon. I was, however, as a kid, I was a huge Digimon fan. Like there are some people who would say either Digimon or Pokemon, but I'm actually one of those rare breeds that actually go for both. And I'm sure that in the Digimon, in the Japanese anime, they have a completely different opening. Like, they always have a different intro, and I've seen so many cases, like when it comes to either Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh and stuff like that. And it's rather unfortunate that Kujiwara, like, he seems like a very prominent player in the Digimon world. Like, no matter what, like, he's been there since the very beginning, starting with Butterfly, and then, like, it seems more of a tradition to always have him on board to introduce you to the, like, to introduce you through song the world of Digimon in Japan. Mm-hmm. And you know, at least his services are, you know, they're at least they're going to be useful, considering that he is still going to be performing for, well, he still has his songs going for the Digimon Adventure Tri-series, well, the film series. Have you ever heard any of the songs done by Kujiwada, James?
I looked at the Digimon theme songs last night. Mind you, I this was in the Pokemon Digimon era where I wasn't really I wasn't really casting much interest towards these franchises, but you had to be familiar with them because they were everywhere. So last night,
that was pretty much the Minions and Frozen of that era.
Oh yeah, I couldn't go to church without listening to my pastor talk about the new Pokemon, Color Playboy. Game Boy.
The Playboy? What the fridge are you talking about? Pokemon Color Playboy.
Oh my god.
Step is misty. Oh my god. Where can you buy these Pokemon colored Playboys?
They had a Pikachu Game Boy that my pastor mentioned once in a sermon. That's what I was trying to say. But
Oh, the Game Boy, of course.
But I listened to Butterfly last night, and it sounds like for the first riff in the introduction there, it almost sounded like a Japanese Born to Be Wild cover.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I kind of liked it.
Oh, no, I'm not going to deny it. When I heard some of his stuff, they do seem like the kind of things that I can really dig into it. Like, everybody says that apparently the theme songs for anime TV shows, they're always better than how they are in English. And, you know, I do agree. Yu-Gi-Oh!, as much as I love the intro, it was really cool. But then, when you see the Japanese version, oh my god, it is rocking awesome. Literally, it's just pure rock. And honestly, it's a bit disappointing that we don't have that. And even in America, all we got, I'm sure, a lot of kids, a lot of 90s kids, I'm not sure the new millennials, or actually, I would probably say maybe the new millennials as well, depending on how old they are. Everybody has known about, the theme, Digimon, Digital Monsters, Digimon are the champions. But then you get Butterfly. I don't know. It just feels refreshing. Maybe it's just because it's the first time that we heard it. But I don't know. It just feels like an interesting new take on it. And especially, even checking on the remake of Butterfly, it's really cool. I really do like the updated version as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have yet to listen to the updated version, but if you're on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere and you're mourning this guy's passing, go ahead and tweet out the theme song wherever you can find it, just to mm-hmm. give him just to honor him, I guess, no kai? Yeah.
Kujiwada. Yeah. I think that's probably the best way to put it, is that if you guys want to give a real honor to him, just put up the songs that he has written for rather it be either Butterfly or Seven, just, put up his songs, show the world what he has done as part of his legacy. I'm sure he's definitely worth to be mentioned. Definitely does deserve to have more recognition outside of Japan, and I could definitely guarantee you that he will be missed.
Yeah. Oh, I meant to say Owakari no Kai, the farewell event.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Oh, yeah, the Okawa. Oh, yeah, Okawa. Owakara no Kai. Yes, that's that too. If you're in Japan, you can also head out to it says the event will take place in Tokyo in the latter half of this month. So if you are in Tokyo during that time, definitely go and check out the event.
Okay.
All right. So going back a bit on a lighter note, it's time that we now go and move on to Matt's Pick of the Week. And this is something that has definitely captured the interest of animation fans everywhere. And this got me a bit curious to see what it's all about. And I finally decided to check it out. And wow, it really is fascinating in more levels than one. And what I am talking about is the unofficial Disney 47-minute documentary called Imagining Zootopia, which basically is the making of Disney's Zootopia, the latest animated feature that's going on right now. And if I just want to start things off by saying that I did read a bit about the history of Zootopia, like everything that's been going on. I read through the book The Art of Zootopia, and it really is fascinating to know the amount of, like, the one thing that I've always admired from this movie is the amount of detail that's been put into the world of Zootopia. It is just absolutely phenomenal. And the book really does cover a lot of the basics of what they have done to pretty much build Zootopia and really make it feel like an actual city. While in here with Imagining Zootopia, not only is this an interesting look on how they made the film, but this is also an interesting look on how Walt Disney Animation Studios would build their animated features, not just Zootopia. Well, they only show how they made Zootopia, but that's just an example of how they would make movies like Zootopia. But also, like, this is kind of the same thing they went through with stuff like Rapunzel or Wreck-It Ralph or Frozen or Big Hero 6. It really is a fascinating documentary. James, what are your inputs into it?
Well, I'm watching this documentary on how they did it and what they went through for it. And a lot of the, I dare say a lot of it does seem very well familiar. I remember while reading Seamus Cullane's book, Animation from Script to Screen, years and years and years ago, one of the things that he suggested for young up and coming animators is to keep a scrapbook of things from magazines like couches and whatnot in case you need designs for something. So you can look through there and get an idea and say, okay, I'll draw this. Nowadays, when you're doing that, you think, well, I'll just type in, if I need a design for a couch, I'll just get my inspiration by typing in couch through Google Images. So you think that with modern animated features, that's the sort of thing that they do. So it's like, okay, I want to know what a fennec fox looks like, or I want to know what a giraffe looks like. I'll just pull up a picture. Back in the old days, when before the interwebs, the animators would do such crazy things as, you know, bring actual animals into the studio for movies like Bambi and The Lion King and watch how they interact and move and everything. Or they would go to...
I remember there were even some photo evidence and actual videos showing, all the animators. They would have a course, and all they would do is just study the animal that's in front of them, rather it be, like, a deer for Bambi, or even, like, you see a lion that comes on stage, and the animators would look and... like they would try to draw the anatomy and stuff like that, yeah.
And with other movies like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, they would actually go to the Notre Dame Cathedral and the surrounding areas and just sort of get sketches and whatnot. Even though it's in the 90s, the darn place looks a little bit different, but they want to get the idea of the size and scope of the thing. And so with Zootopia, they're not cutting any corners here. They're still doing that sort of thing. And they actually show their teams of animators going to Africa to study the animals. They're doing the best of both worlds, combining the two, going out and getting an idea of what these creatures are like on location in their surroundings, and then trying to sort of humanize them later, which I find rather interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, but honestly, I do find it fascinating because, like, Africa was just one of the many places that they went. They also, like, checked into zoos, and they even took a trip to Animal Kingdom in Walt Disney World. But what's actually really fascinating about that whole trip is that, like, they would talk to the different animators, and, like, each of them would have a different job. And, like, some of them who are in charge of the effects or like the textures, they would pay close attention to they would take a look into the environment, like how the soil is, or the grass, like how the grass is, or like, you know, the textures of the trees, while the people in the lighting department, they take a careful eye on the colors and the shading and how you know, how, like, what happens when the sun would hit the fur of the animals, or they would hit the ground or the trees and stuff like that. It really is fascinating. Like, you could tell that these are professionals. They know what they're doing. They know what they're looking for. And it really, really is interesting. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, there is one thing. Speaking of Animal Kingdom, one interesting factor that I do find that's interesting is actually how Disney has a buddy relationship with Pixar as well, because Pixar and Disney would keep helping each other out with their movies. And like I said, Disney, like, they would go to Animal Kingdom in order to do their research. That, you know, that's a great place to go and you know just look up different animals and stuff like that. But then when they also then there was at one point they decided to send it to the people at Pixar to give them a bit of a work in progress screening to see how it goes. And they gave them back notes. And, you know, honestly, that's probably one of the key elements of how, like, Disney is dominating the animation industry for years and years, because so far you got two of the top animation studios in the world, two of the most prominent names in animation, and they're pretty much helping each other out in order to make their films, whether it be from Disney or from Pixar. It really is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. They show in the movie what they call sweatbox, sweatboxing, and that's when they show the projects, what they're working on, to the producers and whatnot, and get their input on it. And they say, change this or change that. I guess it goes all the way back to the days where Disney was running the company, and they'd all group around one little projector showing a piece of animation, and Disney would call that the sweatbox. I'm glad that they still use that term, because, you know, for old time's sake. But
oh yeah, absolutely.
And you get an idea. Let me throw this out there right off the bat. I thought Zootopia was a good movie. It was not a great movie like some people are saying. But, you know, I like the characters. I thought it was enjoyable.
Go, James! You're out of my show.
Yes, I am not coming back. But some of the directions that they show the movie going in earlier stages, I find it actually rather fascinating, because it could have been a slightly darker movie in so many ways.
Can I add into this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because one of the unique assets that they mention about Zootopia is that for the longest time during production, there are two things that the story could have been completely different. Number one is that there was this entire concept of shock collars that they would give to the predators.
Oh, yes.
That if ever they get agitated or aggressive, then the shock collars would activate and it would calm the animals down. And throughout that whole time, I do understand where they were going with by getting rid of the idea. I do agree that it's not that great because, like, they want to make Zootopia a great city, but it feels like with the shock collars, right off the bat, you could tell that things aren't necessarily pleasant.
Big Brother is watching you.
Yeah, pretty much. Another element that was completely different is that for a while they thought that the main star of the movie would be Nick Wilde. And for the longest time they thought about, like, is Nick Wilde really suited to be the main character? And they thought about the other ones as well, but ultimately they decided to go with Judy Hopps to be the star of the movie. And I think that's pretty much I find it to be the right choice to go with. And they even mentioned that the tough like they also had a scene where they mentioned that the toughest part that they got to go through was actually the it was in the scene where Nick would break up with Judy after she did her press conference explaining how the animals went savage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or how the animals were going savage. I guess that's not too much of a giveaway because most people have seen this film by now. That was the interesting thing. I read one negative review of this film that in my opinion sort of stops this movie from being a great movie and just a good movie. And the critic who wrote this over on animatednews.com said that yes, it's a message movie about racism, and that's a good thing, but also if I made a movie about saying eat your vegetables, which is a good lesson, I don't need to be reminded of it every 10 minutes. And with Zootopia, yes, the overall message is anti-prejudice, which I think as a rule of thumb is perfectly fine. But I also found in cases like that particular scene where you mentioned where there's a breakup between the two, that's why I thought it didn't make a great movie, because I could see all the buddy cop or buddy comedy cliches just sort of coming in and going, and they're like, okay, this is the part where they split up, this is the part where they get back together, misunderstanding and whatnot. And I also thought if anyone out there thought that the message of anti-prejudice was really heavy-handed in the film, wait till you see the behind the scenes here in this documentary. My goodness, they talk about it,
yeah, like,
every other breath.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, because, like, they try to figure out it's, like, the main subject, and it's not really about racism itself. It's mostly how to get it right in Zootopia. It's not until the end where they actually do talk about their own experience with discrimination and prejudice, which honestly is kind of surprising. You know, like, whether it be, like, there was an Asian woman trying to tell her son, you know, that he could be whatever he wants, or Brian Howard, you know, living a life that, like, where he is subjected to prejudice, considering that he is a gay man.
Yeah, he did mention that. I don't think prejudice is a word, perhaps just prejudice. But,
yeah, prejudice, yeah.
Prejudice. Where's Urban Dictionary? Write it down.
I don't know. It sounds logical to me.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. So obviously that had to be something that they were going to talk about in the documentary. I think another interesting thing about the documentary was showing. You know, you did mention at one point that Nick was going to be the focus of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see an alternate universe where that was the version they were going for. Just to see how it was. Just to see how it would turn out, because when you meet Nick Wilde in the film, he's actually kind of a stereotype that you might even associate with foxes in animated films. You know, he's a con artist, so he's supposed to be the attitudes of being sly, super intelligent, and rather sneaky. And I would have liked to see his backstory on how and why he got that way. And I think that it would have given greater depth to what I typically would say is a cookie cutter, which I don't think he's a cookie cutter character or anything, but he sort of fits into a mold. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I understand. But the one thing I will say about the Zootopia documentary is that the one thing I do wonder about this is that I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, honestly, this would actually make a great bonus feature for the Blu-ray. Like, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yes. Because it does cover the making of Zootopia, like how they pretty much build it up and show how they, you know, how Disney makes an animated feature. This would actually be fantastic for the Blu-ray, you know, just to cover that end. And plus the fact that it only covers the animator, like kind of the director's and the animator side of the whole movie. It's definitely fascinating. I just find it to be. You know, that's one thing I do hope for it. But yeah, if you guys have not seen the documentary of Imagining Zootopia, you can actually go check it out right now on Fusion's YouTube channel. And that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much to listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. And may I say, James, thank you so much for coming here. It really has been an awesome episode.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I'll be sure to share this episode wherever. And if you guys like hearing my voice, and you'd like to see a face attached to it, go ahead and click the links on the shows that Matt here mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Actually, like, just in case, also, you want to mention where they can find you?
You can find me on YouTube as Jaimetude, Jaimetud. Just type in www.youtube.com/Jaimetude, Jaimetud. And the other place that you can find me, if you search on there for Bluebee TV, which is BLUEBEE TEEVEE. It's funny spelling, but it's a awesome kids show. I'd like to thank Jody Murphy, give her a shout out for giving me this opportunity to teach kids about autism. It's a fun thing. It's a fun thing to do.
All right. And as for myself and this podcast, you can find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this episode on iTunes or any other podcast device, then do you mind just going out there and rate and review this episode? And also, if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on this video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.
Ciao for now.